What do you say to people who have been obvious skeptics about things that you've taught? And they come up to you and say, look, I don't believe this. You know, in next hour, we're going to talk about your book, Untie the Strong Woman. And I think it's going to throw a lot of people for a loop in terms of what it means. But what do you say to the skeptics who just don't believe?
Well, hopefully they'll throw them for a beautiful loop that will be like a slingshot.
And we'll hope it opens them up
to a new consciousness.
Let's hope so.
That's useful for them. I think it always has to be useful for the person. Skeptics aren't usually the problem. It's cynics. Cynics are, the way my grandmother used to say, was that a cynic is a disappointed idealist. And I find that to be true, that they began with great hopes and great dreams. And for whatever reason, twists of fate, choices, free will, whatever, they were hurt. They were blocked, they were occluded in some way, and they're angry about it now. And so they see everything with a jaded eye, as though it cannot be, and that's a great injury to imagination and intuition. So the instinctive psyche imagines, understands, grasps, holds, turns things in its hands, trying to determine what its usefulness is. It's a heart, soul, mind, body, spirit. Ambition, creativity, talent. It takes everything and looks at it and turns it over and sees how can this be useful. So when that's blocked in someone, you know that there's a wound somewhere in the psyche. And so rather than talking to them about the great, grand, beautiful, radiant universe, really what you might have to do is say, like, where did this happen? What does make you feel light, and what does make you light up? Where is your electricity? Or has this been killed off? And if so, let's find out what the cause is and let's undo it. Let's make it different.
It's difficult in today's environment. You know, here we are, you know, faced with, you know, governments that lie in deceit.
Right.
You know, we're faced with, you know, economic mess.
Right.
There's hunger and starvation. There's fighting. Yeah. You know, the humankind tends to kill all the time.
Yeah.
So we're faced with all these things. It's difficult for someone to simply try to push that aside and think spiritual or supernatural. And you know, so they're more concerned about, and sometimes I understand this, you know, surviving, taking care of their
yeah.
family. Paying their car payment.
I agree. Yeah.
But I have learned, and you know, if I was coming to you for your advice, I would be telling you this story that I have learned that in order to get beyond that, and that is just worried about your car payments and everything else, if you get into this other mode of consciousness, if you build on it, it takes you to incredible places that you have no idea how far you can go, and that's the way to go.
I would agree with you. Again, it's what I would call walking in two worlds, that you can walk in the world of the mortgage payment, and that's important. I'm a pragmatic mystic. I do not at all agree with the idea that it should be ungrounded.
Right.
It needs to be useful.
If your head's in the clouds, you
that's
could
right.
be headed for trouble.
That's right. Well, you could literally lose your head. You need to have your roots and your wings both,
that's right.
so to speak. So, but, and also, to worry only about the things of this world means to also block off lots of creative options that might be applicable to paying that mortgage in various and sundry ways. And so the focus on ego alone, that worries a lot. The ego is like a little monkey that likes to collect lots of bright, shiny things, but also worries a lot about things, most of which do not happen. But when they do, often runs a bit in circles, you know, it's high anxiety. But the spirit and the soul of a person, the spirit is the animating force of the psyche. It is the electricity of the psyche. When someone has been traumatized, they often sit and stare. The spirit is stunned. It cannot act in those moments. It just sits and stares because it's traumatized.
It's wasted, isn't it?
That's right. When you see a little boy, like when you were a little boy, when you heard music and you were 2 years old or 3 years old, you danced. That's the animating spirit. You had not yet learned to act proprietous and, you know, walk instead of running, which all little boys and little girls are taught eventually, unfortunately, mm-hmm. to not run.
Well, and if you don't learn how to walk before you run, you fall on your face.
But that's the animating spirit. The soul is different than spirit. The soul is a gigantic broadcasting and transmission system. It broadcasts to us, but also beyond us. It receives what we feel in our bodies, what we feel in our minds, what we perceive through our eyes and our senses, but it also receives from beyond the body, the mind itself.
Ironically, you talk about the soul because as we move into November 2nd now, it's All Souls Day, and though it's a religious event for Catholics,
that's right.
You know, if you're a true believer in life after death and, you know, the soul and the existence beyond, it's an important moment, I think, to reflect about the incredible things people can do if they get into this mindset.
I like your attitude. Attitude is, you can have a soul attitude or you can have an ego attitude. And a soul attitude is much deeper, much broader, much larger, much more powerful. The ego actually is small. If you could consider the soul, imagine it as a universe, and imagine the ego as a tiny island.
That's right.
The difference between the two in terms of thinking, imagining, understanding, and so on. And so when you're talking about the way that people perceive, that they can perceive much more largely, if they move from one aspect of psyche to the other, you're talking about them changing their attitude.
You know, Clarissa, you know, when we get into your book, Untie the Strong Woman, you're going to tell us who that woman is.
I will.
And what this means to a lot of people and the various experiences that have been going on this planet for years with this.
Not only for years, but if you look at drawings of unidentified flying objects all the way back into ancient times, You see often as associated with the outline of the feminine, outline of a womanly outline, an outline of even a uterine sort of look to it. This roundness, ovoid, is also called the piscus. It's spelled P-I-S-C-U-S. And there's the rayos, or the rays, that surround Blessed Mother.
That's right. That's right. Well, it'd be interesting for me too, being the tough macho guy that I am, to talk with you about this and to have you explain it to us.
I would love to, and I'd love to tell you about other men who have a veneration of the Holy Mother too.
And you know, again, with all this, as you put this together for yourself, do you use this in your everyday life when as an analyst, as a consultant, as someone who deals with post-trauma victims, do you tap into that to help them?
I would say it to this way, Mr. Norrie.
Call me George. Call me
all right, George, the Dragon Slayer. Yeah, okay.
Call me Mr. Norrie. Sounds like I'm even...
People, you know, from the old country, they say, in order to be the Dragon Slayer, first you have to be the dragon, and then you get to be the Dragon Slayer. You're talking about developing your mind and your psyche. But I think that it is, like most of us, it's like a skin that we're born with, so that we almost don't think about whether we be with or not with the great forces of this world. But as we grow up and forget, in a sense, where we came from, we get clues as young adults and sometimes even as teenagers that of remembering that we came with an angel. And I'm going to say it to you this way. The word genius means the angel you were born with. When you say someone's a genius, you're talking not about them per se, you're talking about the force that they were born with.